Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacy Toth of PaleoParents.com and author of two paleo cookbooks. The first, Eat Like Dinosaur, kid-friendly gluten-free recipe and guidebook, and Beyond Bacon, recipes that respect the whole hog.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne, also known as the Paleo Mom. I have a background in medical research, and I love to write approachable explanations of the whys behind the paleo diet. I'm also the author of two upcoming books, The Paleo Approach, which is a complete guide to managing autoimmune disease using diet and lifestyle, and the companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip. Hey, Sarah.
Hi, Stacy. How are you?
I wish it was a little bit better. I think maybe I either partied a little too hard this weekend and exposed myself to a little bit of germs.
So oh, no.
Fighting a bit of a cold or what probably will end up being the stomach flu because someone that
There's a nasty one going around.
Yeah, so one of the guests that we had this weekend ended up leaving halfway through the weekend and went home and ended up with the stomach flu. So we got the prime, like, 24-hour beforehand incubation, spread the germ everywhere, period. We're all exposed to it. So, and another person that was here at the same time has already, like, messaged me and been like, I'm feeling really sick. Are you feeling sick? So I think we're going to hopefully fight it, but definitely not feeling my best right now.
I hope Matt has a huge pot of broth on the stove.
We, of course, have broth by the gallons.
Right.
But I do have, like, a local elderberry kombucha that I'm thankful is in the house because elderberry is supposed to be good as well. And
so it's an immune stimulant. I would, as a person with an autoimmune disease, I'd be a little careful with elderberry.
That's good to know.
Yeah. I can't remember offhand if it's a TH1 or if it's a TH2. I'd have to look that up. But that is something that just be careful. Just throwing that out there. A lot of the herbal cold remedies are not people with immune dysfunction.
All right. Well, I'll probably switch to regular kombucha that I know and trust.
and ginger. I mean, ginger would be great.
We have ginger kombucha, and I do a lot of ginger lemon tea. And I don't know that oregano oil is going to help since it's not in the throat, but we'll see. I don't know. I'm just hoping going to bed and getting rest will be helpful. So.
How can sleep not be helpful?
Anyway, I feel terrible that I'm sick this week because we have a super...
The most exciting guest ever?
Yes.
Can I say that?
Well, we don't want to insult our previous guest,
okay.
But it's nonetheless extremely exciting.
It's very, very exciting. It's a person who has been extremely influential in my life in the last couple of years, in my entire approach to nutrition, who has been just a tremendous inspiration for thousands of people. And I think everyone probably already knows I am talking about Dr. Terry Walls. Dr. Walls, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm sorry I can't welcome you with more cheer.
You'll recover soon. Plenty of sleep and good vitamin D.
Yes.
From some pasture-raised lard. Just throwing that out.
Yes, I have been inundating myself with pasture lard for the past 24 hours and broth.
And for the past couple of years, really.
Really.
So, Dr. Walls, I mean, for me, my first introduction to you was your TEDx Iowa City talk in the fall of 2011 that became this, like, viral YouTube sensation. And certainly within the paleo community, it was, it was all over paleo social media that fall, which was really, really early on in my paleo journey. So it was at a time where I was just starting to understand that diet was more than just if I eat less, I'll lose weight, and if I eat more, I'll gain weight, and I just have to eat something for fuel. And it was right when I was starting to understand nutrition and nutrients and micronutrients. And so it had so much impact on my personal life. It changed the way that I ate. It changed the way that I even wrote about food. It was my launching point into the Paleo Autoimmune Protocol. But you are not just a YouTube video. You've got a website, terrywalls.com, and you have a new book coming out in March called The Walls Protocol. And I have had the good fortune of getting an early release copy of this book. It is outstanding.
I'm very, very pleased with this book. We spent a lot of time thinking about what people would want to know. So one of the things we did was I put a call out to all of my followers on Facebook and in my email list and solicited their questions to be sure that we answered all of those questions. We crowdsourced how people wanted me to approach the program as I wrote about it. And I thought it worked out very well.
One of the things that I really like about your book is how much of your personal story, which is very inspirational, is very engaging, is sort of scattered throughout the book. Clearly you sort of start very much with your personal story, but then throughout the book, there's all of these little tidbits of, you know, different times in your own health journey. And it just, it makes it read like a friend is telling you a story. A friend is giving you this great information that you need to change your life. And it has this sort of personability that I think is really important in a book like this, because it just makes it feel so much more approachable for someone who is, you know, very ill and dealing with a lot of challenges and then is faced with doing a radical change in their diet, which can be extremely mm-hmm. intimidating. And the way that you write, it just makes it feel natural, you know, and just, it's just a very enjoyable read and incredibly informative. There's just, you know, tons and tons of information in this book.
We worked very hard at keeping this so that I serve a wide variety of people who are very well educated and those who just barely made it through high school. And so we wanted to have a book that whole spectrum of audience could enjoy, appreciate, and feel very comfortable with. I think we did a terrific job of throwing in a very intimate look into my life and how I became ill and how I recovered.
So just because some of our listeners may not be super familiar with you, do you want to give the short elevator ride version of your story to sort of bring people up to speed? Because it really is inspirational.
So I have secondary progressive multiple sclerosis. The MS diagnosis was first as relapsing remitting in 2000 on the basis of a history of visual dimming in the 1980s. And then a foot drop in 2000, abnormal lesions on my MRI, and abnormal spinal fluid. I got a second opinion from the world-famous Cleveland Clinic, who agreed I had MS. I started Copaxone. I had one more episode of arm weakness in 2001, otherwise no other episodes of weakness. But by 2003, my disease had transitioned to secondary progressive MS. And that's when I was going downhill really quite rapidly. It looked like I was going to become bedridden by my disease with enough time. And that's when I went back to deciding I was going to read the medical literature myself. And I started reading PubMed.gov, looking at the animal models, the mouse models for MS, and began identifying vitamins, herbs, and supplements that were helpful. And I would also say I'd been on a paleo diet since 2002, and it still declined. In 2007, I discovered functional medicine, deepened my understanding, had a longer list of nutrients. And then that fall, I had the insight to say, I should get these nutrients from food. So then I did research. So I redesigned my diet to to get the 31 nutrients that my research had said were critical to the brain. And I was to get this from food using functional, paleo principles. And when I redesigned my diet, the magic began to happen. The fatigue began to rapidly reduce. The brain fog rapidly reduced. My walking ability improved. At the summer of 2007, I could sit up in a chair for about 10 minutes. Otherwise, I was in a recliner or a bed. I could walk short distances using two walking sticks. Within 5 months of my what I now call the Walls diet, I can walk throughout the hospital without a cane. Within 6 months, 7 months, I got on my bike the first time in 6 years. And within the year, I was able to do an 18-mile bike ride with my family. The following year, I did a trail ride in the Canadian Rockies. And the following year, I shifted the focus of my clinical research and began doing clinical trials, testing the impact of the Walls protocol, the whole program I developed, in others with secondary progressive MS. I've go around the country lecturing the public and healthcare professionals, scientists, about the Walls protocol, using nutrition to deal with chronic disease. And I've now been lecturing internationally, and I have this book that will be coming out in just a couple of weeks.
So I would love to talk a little bit more about your clinical trials, because this is just one of the most amazing contributions to, you know, the entire field. Yes. The first paper from the first clinical trial is just now an EPUB ahead of print. People can go onto, yes, PubMed and read the abstract. I would love to get into a little bit more details into, sure, how you've structured the clinical trials, because I think that's something that the paleo community actually as a whole is really hungry for. Not just clinical trials that look at, you know, modifications of a paleo diet, but just the health benefits of a paleo diet in general. There's been, I think, 8 or 9 clinical trials now that sort of look at ancestral, mm-hmm, diets and various markers of health. And so this is really the first, this is the first clinical trial that has been published that has looked at the paleo diet and autoimmune disease specifically. And you've got more, you know, coming down the pipeline too.
Yes, yes. Well, I'll give you a little history on the trial, because I just think that's interesting. So when I decided to, you know, shift my clinical research and then I was going to test this out, we could not get the study approved through the Institutional Review Board because there was no other safety data other than me, and the they just thought it was too high a risk
to eat a nutrient dense diet.
Well, because I used vitamins and supplements, I was using the same regimen that I was on. There's no other safety data other than me, and I'm not critical of the Pharmacy and Therapeutics Committee. I think that was correct. Fortunately, the chair of the Institutional Review Board called in the Therapeutics Committee and said, "We really want Dr. Walls to do this research. Would you please work with her to identify what are the mods she's going to have to do to so that you feel safe endorsing the study?"
That's wonderful.
So we had more exclusionary criteria. We had more safety labs. And we could only do 10 at a time so that we could do a safety report to show that nobody had been harmed. And the other thing I certainly want to acknowledge is the dean of the College of Medicine had worked behind the scenes to help me get the senior scientists on my committee, on the research team, so we'd have a good design and get it through the IRB. Had I not had the support from the dean, you know, this would have stalled. And the fellow who was the dean had been the chair of medicine, who had watched my decline and this stunning recovery. And Paul Rothman, who was chair, he said, "Terry, you need to write this up as a case report, and you should try and see if you can get a small pilot study on this." So he had been giving me a lot of coaching and then helping me find the right mentors to make these things happen.
That's exactly the way the system is supposed to work.
Yeah. Yes.
That's wonderful. So this first study, how many patients are in it?
So we got 20 people through the 12 months. What we have presented, though, were the results of the first 10 that we had enrolled, because, as again, we could enroll 10, run the safety, get our safety committee to review everything, goes back to the REB, they said, okay, it's safe, go ahead and finish your study. So we published the first 10. We presented that at a number of places around the country, and just a few weeks ago, we finally got the paper in print. You know, and I'd say the big point of that paper at this time is, here's the process, what we did. It was complex, and so the questions are, could people do it? So that makes it, is it a feasibility study? And if they do they get harmed? So that makes it a safety study. And then when they do everything, how big is the effect size? And then that lets us write for a bigger grant with hopefully a couple $1 million to run this in a very large scale way.
And moving forward, are you going to continue to have the supplements that you've been taking as part of your protocol, or are you going to be more focusing on the nutrients from food?
So what we're doing presently, it's really a food-based. I do some testing, clinical testing, and we supplement according to the results of the testing. So any supplement use is very individualized.
Oh, that's really neat. And is Eastim, and maybe we should probably explain what Eastim is for our listeners, but is Eastim part of the trials as well?
So in the clinical trial that just got published, we had basically the Walls diet, the supplements that we used, we taught people to do a meditation, an exercise program that was designed for their level of function, and electrical therapy to the muscles, again, that was designed to their level of function. And so that's electrical current applied to the motor nerve. So it's uncomfortable to painful, depending on how much current you decide to dial up. And that is a way of augmenting the effectiveness of the exercise. In the first study, people are doing everything that I did, and we're following them for 3 years. In the subsequent studies, we are breaking down the intervention. So we have a study going on right now using just electrical therapy to see the impact of what electrical therapy will do without any additional dietary changes. And then I have a study that compares usual care, the Walls diet, and the Walls Paleo Plus diet. And that study is underway. Then I have another study in relapsing remitting that's comparing the Walls diet to usual care.
And we should also mention, this is a great place to mention, that you are actually recruiting for a new clinical trial. And we will put the link to the clinicaltrial.gov link for people to follow. So if there are anybody, if there is anybody out there who is interested in joining Dr. Walls' trials, or if you know somebody, if you have a friend who's maybe struggling and who may wish to be a guinea pig with hopefully some fantastic personal results.
Possibly. So let me quickly review eligibility so people know what we're looking for.
Sure.
First, because it's a nutritional study, people should still be eating the standard American diet, not have fully adapted paleo, because we're going to randomize them into the usual care or one of my study diets. We want them to have fatigue because that's the main thing that we follow. And they need some level of difficulty walking. They need a cane, a walker, a brace, or they have to walk much more slowly because of symptoms related to the MS. And we have the eligibility criteria in much more detail and how to contact the study team on that clinicaltrials.gov page.
We'll put the link right in the show notes so people can easily find it if they're listening to us. Stacey, do you have any questions before we go to questions from my Facebook fans?
No, I don't think so. I'm sorry.
You're still feeling okay over there?
I have a fever. No, I actually had the pleasure of hearing Dr. Walls speak, I think, at last year's Paleo FX.
You texted me, actually.
Did I text you from
Yeah, you were like, I'm listening to Dr. Walls talk. Dr. Walls, you have no idea how like girl fan we are. And you so wish you were here right now, I believe was your text message, Stacey. Because I think I got a number of text messages from Stacey during PaleoFX last year because I was in such like tunnel vision mode with the book. And I just, that was the only thing I was doing. And I just didn't have 5 days to go to Austin last year. And so Stacey sent me at least 5 or 6 text messages during that conference that was like, you wish you were here because this is what I'm doing right now. And one of them was during your talk. It was true. I'm going this year though.
Yes, good. I will be there too.
Excellent. Maybe we'll even be on a panel together.
I would hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too. Just for anyone who's listening, I think the organizers are still trying to sort out the details. So most of us still don't know exactly what we're doing. So why don't I read some questions?
Sure.
This question is from Melissa, and she writes, I was diagnosed with MS 10 years ago, no drugs and a disability score of 0. Can I still heal my 30 to 40 lesions that will not heal? I have been gluten-free and dairy-free since diagnosis and learned and started paleo in August of 2010, and then the autoimmune protocol for the last 1.5 years. My last MRI was December of 2012. I have an appointment with Dr. David Perlmutter today, and it went well, but he agreed that at some point the disease burden might get too much for my system. Can I heal and stop progression? Please help. I need to be around and mobile for my kids and hubby and myself.
Okay. So the first thing I have to remind all of our listeners is that all of my comments are educational in nature and are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, that only the patient's personal physician can treat them. So I'll take these questions and try and generalize them to the a larger group. So I hear this question a lot, and it has to do, can I heal my brain and clear up my MRI so it's completely normal? And looking at the research, there's not a whole lot yet on gluten, brain, spinal cord disorders, so we know precisely at what percentage will return to normal, nor do we know how to predict who's going to return to normal and who will not. There are some things that are suggestive. The longer you've had your lesions, the less likely they are to fully clear. So if you've had your lesions on a short-term basis, you have a greater chance of them clearing. I would also make the observation that we don't really know what the significance of the scar lesions are in terms of function, particularly since in the literature related to gluten and neurological disease, you can see functional improvements that occur, either reduction in pain, improvement in coordination, improvement in balance, improvement in mental health symptoms, and still have the MRIs, sometimes have lesions in place.
So I guess, you know, we don't really know what the long-term ramifications of those lesions would be if a patient is feeling great. And
if you're feeling great, doing well, your medical symptoms questionnaire score is low, so you don't have many symptoms in other parts of your body, then my simplistic way of thinking about those lesions on the head is that they're not interfering with function. And so what really matters is what is your functional status. If it's stable and improving, that's the most important thing. And also put in a big word, David Perlmutter is one of the best functional medicine neurologists around. I can't recommend him highly enough.
We can also throw in a plug for Grain Brain, which is an excellent
man, fabulous book.
Yeah. There's a reason why it's selling.
It's been on, right.
It's been number one New York Times bestsellers for ever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's doing very, very well.
All right, this question is from Jennifer. I would like to know if Dr. Walls has flares, and if so, how she treats them when they happen.
Mm-hmm. So this is a terrific question. When I have been exposed to gluten, for example, I had gone out to a restaurant and there was some lovely soup that was supposed to be gluten and dairy free. I ate it. And after I consumed it, they get notified by the server that, oops, there was some gluten and dairy in that soup.
Oh.
So 48 hours later, I had a flare of my MS-related pain, which is like electrical jolts of pain across my face that are at times so severe enough that I can't stand, walk, or talk. And so when this occurs, I take a prednisone burst and taper, and that will stop things. I've since learned, so I travel with my prednisone, because if I get exposed to the wrong food, very consistently, 48 hours later, I'll have a flare of my MS pain that is incapacitating, really. As long as I'm very meticulous on my food, I am doing well, and I continue to improve. When I see my physical therapist, they are advancing my exercise regimen, making my exercises more complex and giving me more challenging work.
How long does it typically take you to recover from an exposure like that?
So if I get exposed to something that turns on my face pain, my face pain will go from somewhat annoying to horrifically incapacitating within 2 hours.
Wow.
And then at that point, I'm taking my prednisone, or my family's getting prednisone, and I can't tolerate any sensory stimulation, light, sound, anything. So I'll take 100 prednisone, lay in a quiet, dark area until it passes, you know, and then I do my taper. I feel extraordinarily fortunate that this happens to me, because it gives me immediate, you know, pretty prompt feedback when I've made a poor food choice. And it's usually, I figured out now, sauce or soups, if you go out to eat, are things I don't do anymore. So if I get into the wrong food, I have problems in 48 hours. I do find in my clinical practice that, you know, about a third of the people will have a reaction quickly enough, you know, in 24, 72 hours, they can tell. But more often, people just have a very slow dwindle, and it becomes much harder for them to link which foods are problems.
Yeah, I have some foods which cause the immediate reaction and some foods which cause
the dwindle, the
sort of sneak up on you. And it's really tough, especially because the foods that tend to sneak up on me are also the really high dopamine response rewards foods. And It tends to become the ones where I ignore the link because I don't want it to be there, because I want to be able to eat those foods. For me, like, one of the sneaky ones is chocolate, and life without chocolate is sad. And every once in a while, I'll get into that denial cycle of, well, maybe, you know, maybe my immune system is working well enough, and maybe my stress is well enough managed, and maybe I can try a little bit. No, look, no reaction. I guess that means I can have more next time. And then it still hasn't worked. But it is a test I am willing to do over and over and over again.
I can understand that.
Yeah. All right. So our next question is from Jennifer. And Jennifer is curious if you see any similarities between MS and autism, and if you think that the Walls protocol could be helpful for autistic kids too. And I actually think that we could probably generalize this to other immune and autoimmune disorders. Like, how far reaching can the Walls protocol get?
A wonderful question. So if we look at diseases at the cellular level, we see that there's problems with oxidative stress or mitochondria that are not working well. We often see problems with inappropriate inflammation that is damaging to tissues. And we'll see that in autism, schizophrenia, bipolar, depression, obsessive compulsive disorder, early cognitive decline, Parkinson's. So all of our brain disorders have a mixture of oxidative stress and excessive inappropriate inflammation. So, and if we look at our medical kinds of things, if you're overweight, if you have heart disease, high blood pressure, clogging of the arteries, or if you have autoimmune conditions like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, MS, any of the skin disorders, at the cellular level, they all are tied together because of the oxidative stress, that is mitochondria that aren't working well, and excessive inappropriate inflammation. And for all of these conditions, high toxic load and high cortisol levels will make the problem worse. So the things that I see in my clinics are that putting people on the WALS protocol addresses the mitochondrial dysfunction, lowers the inappropriate inflammation, helps the body get rid of the toxins, helps the person normalize their cortisol levels, and symptoms steadily improve. My young residents laugh and say, you know, Dr. Walls, it's the same treatment for everyone. And I laugh back and say, they all have the same basic problem. The mitochondria are starved. They have inappropriate inflammation, a lot of food sensitivities that they haven't recognized. Cortisols are through the roof, and they're toxic. So fixing all of those things at the ground level is going to help your brain and psychological disorders. It'll help your general medical issues, certainly diabetes, obesity, and it has tremendous help for all of the autoimmune disorders.
It's probably for people who are sort of familiar with my work and familiar with your work who don't necessarily – well, they can't have both of our books in their hands right now. They can have mine but not yours. You know, I want to actually emphasize that there's probably a 98% overlap between Dr. Wall's recommendations and my recommendations. I think even though the science that we're using to approach that is certainly complementary, but we're actually coming at it from slightly different directions because Dr. Walls is coming at it from a cellular health standpoint and I'm coming at it just sort of zoomed out a little bit and looking at immune function and immune health, and which is why my book is very focused on immune and autoimmune conditions, although there's lots in my book that can be generalized for anyone. But I think that it's really fascinating that we sort of, from these two very different perspectives, still come to the same conclusions about what a healing and health-promoting diet looks like.
Correct. You know, I think what we have both brought that is so important is we have to have a maximally nutrient-dense diet if we're going to restore health. And if you're going to restore immune health, or if we're going to restore cellular health, we have to maximize our micronutrients. And for most people, they need to have some mental framework to think about how they're organizing their day so they can, day after day, easily, consistently get the maximal nutrition possible into their body and reduce the pro-inflammatory components as much as possible.
So I have a question that's a little bit of a change of gears from Jolaine. And she writes, what should a patient say to their doctors to convince them to pay attention to the paleo autoimmune protocol or the WALS protocol so that it will be well received by the doctor, so they're not sort of shot down? I think many autoimmune patients get told that diet has nothing to do with it.
You know, I get this question commonly, and here are a couple of thoughts. When talking to your physician, primary care docs are likely to be far more responsive to adapting diet and lifestyle. And so I would work primarily with your primary care doc, and it makes everyone a little bit crazy to, if you stress, I'm removing this stuff from my diet. We're far more interested in, are you having, getting your adequate nutrition? So going to your doc and saying, look, I'm going to follow the Walls diet. I'm having 9 cups of fruits and vegetables, organ meat, seaweed, and grass-fed meat. Is there anything we have to monitor as I do this? So you can tell what you're stressing, then inquire, are there any laboratory testing that needs to be monitored because I'm going to make this dietary change? They may want to monitor your blood sugar, your lipid values, and other things. Certainly if you're on Coumadin, that will complicate things a bit. And it doesn't really matter if the neurologist thinks diet's important or not. You want some doc, and probably your primary care doc, that you can trust with to say, I'm ramping up my nutrition. Help me monitor me, I change the health status as I make this change. And then when you begin to feel like $1 million, and you'll know when you can feel like $1 million because you're sleeping well, your energy's good, then you can begin a conversation with the physician that you trust. Say, I'm feeling so terrific. Can we begin the conversation about how to taper some of these medications and have opinions about which ones you think you would like to taper? But you need to have some physician that you're working with as you do that. And you certainly don't do that until you feel like $1 million.
Oh, absolutely. You've got to get
that time will come.
Yeah. You've got to get the diet and lifestyle dialed in, and you've got to be seeing improvements before you go off those medications. Otherwise,
and you need to have some physician who's helping you with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. I have about 8 questions about methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase gene mutations.
MTHFR. Yes.
And basically, what you think, there's literally like, what do you think about MTHFR? I think maybe we can talk about, I think specifically the extra challenge that a lot of autoimmune patients have with problems in their methylation cycle because of gene mutations in this, and maybe talk about some of the extra nutrition that those people need to support their bodies.
So single nucleotide polymorphisms, SNPs, occur in the enzymes that run the chemistry of our lives. We know that people with autoimmune conditions are more likely to have SNPs interfering with how efficiently I manage my B vitamins and how efficiently I manage sulfur and some of the other detoxification pathways. One of the enzymes that's very commonly not quite right is the MTHFR gene, and that's a very common mutation. If you have that mutation, your enzyme might be more efficient or less efficient, although less efficient is far more common. My interpretation is we know for people with MS, there are about 100 genes that have been identified. And many of them are, as I said, in the B vitamins, sulfur, and detox pathways. How that translates is if we have those SNPs, we need a higher dose of those vitamins to bypass that weak, inefficient enzyme. Now, in my case, I know that I was extensively toxic with a lot of heavy metals and plastics, and I finally did a genetic analysis on myself to see, okay, so I must have some inefficiencies in my detox and methylation pathways. And I do. It was not the MTHFR gene. It was several genes in how I handle B12 and some of my detoxification pathways. And as I looked at the analyses, I saw that, you know, my Walls protocol is designed to bypass most of the more common problems with these SNPs as they involve the B vitamins and the detox pathways. And I'll tell you that that was very intentional early on because I knew that I needed to quickly ramp up my detox. And I already knew that I had some methylation problems because of a high homocysteine. So, I mean, the protocol is designed assuming that people with autoimmune conditions likely have inefficient enzymes in these broad categories.
Awesome. All right. So here is another frequently asked question. This is from John. Are you concerned about oxalates?
So this is one of the reasons why making a diet that is perfect for 100% of everyone, other than human breast milk, is going to be very difficult. Always I put out the note that people have to work with their personal physician, so that if someone has kidney stones, oxalic kidney stones, they will want to speak with their nutritionist to say, look, I really would like to implement the Walls diet, but because of my kidney stones, whichever type they are, how do we modify this? And so certainly people with kidney stones, liver disease, kidney disease are going to have to make modifications. People with diabetes will have to work very closely with their personal physician. For the healthy average individual, we are not at all concerned about the oxalic acid.
I actually found a paper not that long ago that actually correlated it was just a correlative study, but the higher the oxalate intake, the lower the risk of kidney disease and gout. And that doesn't make a statement for what happens when you eat high oxalate foods after you have kidney disease.
Correct.
But it does actually show that if you're a healthy person, that worrying about oxalates as an anti-nutrient is really a non-issue.
Right. As long as you're healthy, it's not something we have to be concerned about.
So I have, this is a comment actually from Michelle, and I just really wanted to read it because she asked me to please thank you. She said, having MS and hitting rock bottom, I stumbled upon your video talk, which propelled me into a whole new world. 2 years later, I'm truly a different person. I owe you all my gratitude for having the courage, wisdom, and intellect to challenge and teach us a better way. I just thought that needed to be read.
That is pretty cool.
I know everybody forgot that I'm still on the podcast, but I think, you know, I want to echo that because you mentioned earlier, Sarah, that that TED Talk was kind of groundbreaking. And I remember kind of at the beginning of, you know, kind of our paleo journey when that happened. I don't know that it was the beginning. I think it's probably about a year in. But it was one of those things that not just was it powerful and interesting, but it was also a really good tool for those of us that don't, at the time I didn't know that I had an autoimmune disease and I don't have MS and I don't have anyone in my family with it, but it was something that I could use as a tool. Like, look, this is really serious. People are curing or, you know, alleviating the symptoms of their debilitating diseases through managing with nutrition. And that it was a really powerful thing to be able to share with people. Like, you know, it's not just me losing weight. It's not just like this baloney that I'm telling you, like the kids don't take asthma medication anymore. It was like, no, seriously, look at what's happening. And it's out there in like mainstream media. And that was one of the first things that I remembered as being really powerful and public and available to people in a way that, you know, was a really great conversation tool. And I know that it's more than just a conversation tool to you, but and it is more than that, but it was a really great tool to have and like your in our tool basket, so to speak, on the value and importance of, you know, nourishing our bodies with the right nutrients rather than just, you know, eating what's in front of you because some major marketing company decided that it was a good idea.
You know, I'm just so grateful to have my life back. It had been clear I was going to get steadily worse, probably have to quit working, likely end up bedridden. And that was what I had resigned myself to. I was also afraid that my face pain would turn on and be on permanently. And so I became more afraid of my pain than of becoming bedridden. And fortunately for me, having figured out, you know, the Walls Protocol program, the pain, which had been getting steadily worse, is now, you know, almost inconsequential. My functions improved. And of course, I'm, you know, I have this very active research lab now and a book, a website, And I'm working to let the public know that they can use diet and lifestyle to fix their cells, and it's their brain cells and their own mitochondrion cells that will repair them. It's not going to be the physician. It's not going to be them. Their own individual cells have to do it, and they've got a much better shot at doing that if they'll follow the WALLS protocol. And so I'm very hopeful that word of mouth will make this book available, and that we'll have hopefully create an epidemic of health.
I love that phrase. I'm going to use that, an epidemic of health. That's wonderful. I had a couple of autoimmune bloggers who were visiting me from out of town, Mickey Trescott from Autoimmune Paleo and Angela Alt from Alternative Autoimmune. And when I mentioned that we were going to have you on the podcast this week, they got very, very excited. And one of the things that they said was, every time we see you make a public appearance, every time there's a video or a photo of you, you look younger and younger and younger. It's like you're aging backwards. And it is such a testament to, in addition to all of the improvements in the symptoms of your disease and your and function, but just it's such a visual testament to the power of a micronutrient dense diet. And I really thought that that was something they'd probably be totally embarrassed to know that I mentioned that. I don't know if they actually listened to the podcast. Sorry, girls. But I really wanted to kind of pass that on because I thought that's something you probably hear it all the time.
Well, you know, actually, it's quite funny. When we were doing the cover for the book, we had picked out some author photos, you know, from when I first signed my book contract that had done through the College of Medicine. And then I had some new photos done this fall and prepped for my new website and shared them with my publicist at Penguin. And so Penguin stopped work. So wait a minute. These are too good. We're gonna stop your author photo because you're looking so much better. Yeah, and it was just a year because it's. I completely agree, and I think so. I'm looking younger and I'm feeling stronger. The other day, I'm walking on the treadmill a couple days a week, and I'm able to walk 4 miles an hour, which is still much slower than what I would like, but.
4 miles an hour?
For someone who struggles to walk.
I don't think I can walk 4 miles an hour. Wait a second. 4 miles, that 4 miles an hour is fast.
4 miles an hour is a jog.
I think I'm jogging at that point.
I'm walking quickly, briskly along. And that's really huge when you think of, I had fully accepted that I was a struggle to walk with my two walking sticks. And I'd had 7 years of steady decline, every reason to realize that I was going to become ultimately bedridden by my illness. But instead, I'm swimming, I'm exercising, I'm doing my yoga Pilates, and I'm walking briskly on the treadmill. When I try to jog, I get hip pain. And that happened when I was in my 20s. That's why I quit jogging the first time. So I'm not sure I'll ever be able to jog. So I may be stuck at 4 miles an hour on the treadmill, but that still feels, miraculous to me, to be able to do that. It feels quite miraculous.
An epidemic of health.
We came up with Nutrivore, nutrient seeking. There's been a couple of things that we've come up with.
I like Nutrivore. Nutrivore is one of my favorite new.
Oh, that is nice.
Yeah.
In the last couple of episodes, I'm like, if only we could have all thought about this and like had a powwow 5 years ago. Like, let's just,
Well, I think we're making a very important contribution to the paleo movement by helping people understand that we're just trying to take the agriculturally available foods to make the most nutrient-dense diet. And we need to have some people who are willing to do the work like I am. Okay, we make a plan, we make a menu, we eat it, make sure it's, edible. and then use my research R&D to analyze the diet. Was it nutrient dense or not? If it wasn't hitting the targets that I said it needed to hit, then we have to keep tweaking what the recommendations are so people could follow the recommendations, follow the plan, and we know that they're going to hit the micronutrients that we say are critical. And then the other question, Sarah, is, so what is the RDA? Is it based on what the government says, or is it really probably better based on the analysis of what the hunter-gatherer societies are eating and how they're, you know, depending on the nutrient, 2 to 10-fold the RDA?
Well, so, that's there's an amazing amount of conversation we can have just over the RDA and then how to, because our food, even when we're getting, you know, local produce from a farm where the farmer's geeking out about the quality of his dirt and it was picked that morning, you know, in many cases that still isn't as nutrient dense as what hunter-gatherers are getting from
wild food.
So it becomes this huge challenge. Like, we can both evaluate the RDA, but then you have to evaluate how you're going to meet the, I mean, when you think of, you know, the possibility that the RDAs are a way lower limit and the percentage of people following a Western diet that aren't anywhere close to meeting the RDA for a huge variety of vitamins and minerals, it becomes, I think we just opened a can of worms right at the end of the podcast right there. We'll have to have you back and just talk about that one topic. It could be a whole book.
And the declining vitamin mineral content of our foods as measured by the USDA.
Well, and how many different factors are contributing to that decline in nutrition, because it's poor soil, it's the cultivars that are chosen, it's the amount of storage time, how the food is stored, how it's when it's picked compared to when it's ripe, how it's ripened artificially when it gets to you. There's so many things going into that that are just inherent in our food system that are going to take sort of a massive overhaul of the way we manufacture food in order to fix that problem, which would probably be better for the planet anyways.
Well, you know, the good news is I do spend a fair amount of time talking to the readers about how to improve their food supply, growing their own food and getting closer to the food. And I think that is a very important part of reclaiming health, is getting closer to your food supply.
Definitely. It's been one of, I think, the biggest contributors in my own journey was sort of switching from predominantly buying my food at Costco to predominantly buying my food from local farmers.
Yes.
And it became a huge, I felt different immediately. And it's to the point now where I get really upset if I run out of, you know, local vegetables and, you know, have to buy vegetables at a local store. Like it's something that I'm like, it never tastes the same. Have you read Eating on the Wild Side by Joe Robinson?
No, you're the second person to have mentioned that book.
I actually reviewed it on my blog last week, and just for our listeners, it's a wonderful complement to this discussion right here on sort of how to maximize the micronutrient value of your food. And she has so many fantastic tips on things like food storage and which vegetables to eat first when you do your grocery shopping. So like broccoli loses its nutrients the fastest, so you should always eat broccoli the day that you buy it. And there's all kinds of, you know, little tidbits like that to sort of help us maximize the micronutrients we're getting within sort of the constraints of the modern food supply. So it's definitely a book that I recommend as sort of another complement to this whole discussion. So before we finish the podcast, I actually really have to make a very, very special thank you to both of you. So on Saturday night, we had a potluck party at my house, and you know, it's been like 3 weeks since my book is released. I think I finally just decided I actually wanted to do something to mark the occasion. I'm not a person who plans parties for myself. And all I did was send an email to a bunch of people and say, okay, potluck at my house. We're just going to celebrate how well the Paleo Approach is doing. Just bring something and know that there's a lot of autoimmune people here. So mark it if it has nightshades or dairy in it. I mean, everyone was paleo who came. And then we have a smoker now. So we smoked the pork belly recipe out of Beyond Bacon, which was one of the most amazing things I've ever eaten. But then we also smoked salmon, which was like the other most amazing thing I've ever eaten. And we just had, all these people over, and it was this wonderful, you know, potluck. And it just felt like we haven't ever had that many people in my house. I haven't celebrated my birthday with a birthday party since I was 25. It was fun. Like it had been so long since I'd done something like that. And then my assistant Tamar said, "Sarah, come into the living room. We have a surprise for you." And somehow I had managed to find myself in the kitchen only talking to one person, and everybody else had migrated into the living room. And she had for me this series of videos filmed by my friends and colleagues in the paleo movement and my family and, you know, some friends of mine going back to my first day of university, my brother, my mom, and both of you. And it was just this, you know, collection of short congratulatory videos. Stacey, I believe you took credit for all of my success in your video
for
something.
Sure. For
totally.
Sure.
Stacey, you were actually the first one in the video. And I started crying about 3 seconds in, and I didn't stop until it was done. It was the most amazing, supportive, wonderful thing. And I just wanted to thank you both so much for contributing to it. I don't know that I can express how much that meant to me, how genius of an idea it was by Tamar, and her tenacity to hunt people down to get these videos must have been amazing. And it was just one of the most powerful, reinforcing, supporting, wonderful things that I've ever seen. And I just wanted to thank you both for contributing to that, because I can't, every single new video is like, I can't believe this person is doing a video. And it was just, I think we have some video of me with like mascara running down my face, just sobbing in front of this video because I was so overwhelmed by it. So I just wanted to thank you. And that was just something that was just really special to me. And thank you. Thank you both for contributing to that. It was amazing.
Thanks to Tamar for pulling it together. I felt really badly that I couldn't be there. So when she said that she was going to do that, I was happy to be able to contribute in some way to your special event.
Well, it wasn't designed to be a release party. It was such a, let's just invite some local friends. It was kind of a last minute, you know, we'll just do it next weekend. And it became, you know, that's what it became. It became for me my release party. And that's completely because of how awesome that video was.
Well, you deserve it. You're doing important, wonderful work. And we're all very proud of our contributions. So good for you, Sarah.
Thank you. I'm going to cry again. We're up to about an hour, Stacey. I'm going to mention.
We should probably mention the website, terrywalls.com.
Yep.
People should go there. We have a bunch of free downloads of for all the freebies that were mentioned in the book. And the book, of course, available for pre-order at Barnes & Noble or Amazon.
And in stores everywhere on March 17th.
13th. March 13th.
Excellent. Yes. That's like really coming up. That's awesome.
That's coming up quickly.
And for anybody in the Atlanta area or within a drive from a reasonable drive from Atlanta, I'm doing a book signing in town at Whole Foods Merchants Walk Sunday from 1 till 3. And if anybody is humming and hawing about whether or not they want to go, I will be, you know, sort of, I like, there will be some space. You'll get to meet me and talk with me. And we're going to be trying to arrange a paleo-friendly taste testing around the store. And I'm also not at this point planning any other local events. So this is kind of your chance. So hopefully you guys can come out. You can get information about all the book signings that I'm doing at thepaleomom.com/events. And Stacy and I will be doing a joint book signing with Russ March 8th in the DC area and March 9th in Philadelphia. Stacy, do you know the actual locations? Because they're not in my head.
I know that the DC one is actually in Old Town Alexandria at the Books a Million. And I can't recall off the top of my head where the Philadelphia location
is. It's at a Barnes and Noble. But I can't remember which.
We will definitely be putting up and sharing the Eventbrite links for everybody to try to RSVP, just so we can make sure that we have enough books and also don't overcrowd the stores. And
we'll put those links in the show notes. So
yes.
please RSVP if you're planning on going for any of these book signings, because it really does help us plan for it.
And spread the word, too. Just because you can't go doesn't mean that you don't know someone that is maybe in that area. And like we mentioned last week, having a signed book is a pretty special thing to give someone as a gift. So we suggest bulking up.
We can always sign with, like, no two and just do generic signatures. And then you can buy, like, 10 of them and just give them away to people as you meet them. Just throwing that out there as a possibility. Do we have any, Stacy, any last questions, last thoughts?
No, I just thank you so much, Terry, for coming on the show. And I think it's a really powerful story and good things that you've got going on. And hopefully your book does well and can help heal people. I think that's what we're all in this for. So best of luck.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Usually I'm the kind of
bubbly, inquisitive one.
Right.